This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President-elect Trump presented a flurry of top administration nominees in the last 24 hours. Topping the list, hedge fund manager and billionaire Scott Bessent. ABC's Mary Alice Parks tells us more about some of the other nominations.
Trump also naming Oregon Congresswoman Lori Chavez Dreamer for labor secretary in a nod to unions. And bringing back Russ Vought to run the Office of Management and Budget. He was that key architect of Project 2025, that conservative plan to overhaul the government.
Intense weather hitting both coasts this weekend. West Coast, an atmospheric river continuing to pummel communities. San Francisco has a flash flood warning, dangers of mudslides. Meanwhile, the Northeast, first major snowfall of the season, knocking out power, creating some dangerous road conditions in Pennsylvania and upstate New York. Israeli Defense Forces say they're examining Hamas's claim that a hostage has been killed in northern Gaza. There's no word on how the hostage might have been killed. This is ABC News. New Hampshire police announced criminal charges in connection with the summertime death of a Dartmouth student.
Wan Zhang was found dead in the Connecticut River in July. The 20-year-old Dartmouth student had a blood alcohol level more than twice the legal limit. Police have charged two fraternity members and a sorority in connection with a drinking party. This Dartmouth student was there for the summer session.
I'm a part of a Greek organization right now, and I can see firsthand that we're making an effort to kind of be better at looking out for each other.
Police said there was no evidence of hazing. Brian Clark, ABC News.
In North Carolina, Charlotte Douglas Airport workers voting on a possible strike during one of the busiest travel weeks of the year. And this is expected to be a huge weekend at the box office. Wicked and Gladiator 2 both hitting the big screen. Initial numbers already show that Wicked brought in $19 million in its week-long previews, and Gladiator 2 raked in $6.5 million on Thursday alone. I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Iron Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, the YouTuber. They're likely, this is just me wildly speculating, might have been a wee bit of a gentleman's agreement. Try to make it look good, but nobody's actually going to try to knock anybody out.
I actually put a bet on that, and I bet it for Jake Paul to win, just because I knew it was staged. Mike Tyson was going to do what he's going to do. Clearly obvious he could have knocked him out. He just didn't want to do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. An update on a controversial project in northern Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources has given energy company Enbridge permit approvals to reroute its controversial Line 5 pipeline. It goes through tribal lands. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The DNR's approval allows Enbridge Energy to begin preparations for the rerouting project. Attorney Stephanie Sosi with Earth Justice represents the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Tribe, whose lands have been directly affected by Line 5 for years.
So this is not a foregone conclusion that Enbridge is going to have this pipeline operating. There's a lot of processes, there's a lot of approvals, and this is just one of them. And we're ready to stand with the band and figure out ways to make sure that whatever approvals there are, that they comply with the law.
She explains the current line is illegally trespassing on tribal lands, and Enbridge's solution is to add 41 miles to reroute it, which would still have dire consequences in the event of an oil spill. A pending lawsuit by the tribe to have the line completely removed from its lands awaits a federal court decision that could halt the project entirely. But attorney Evan Feinauer with Clean Wisconsin says that debate misses the bigger picture by ignoring the current climate threats and their generational consequences.
I just hope that people can hold that long-term view in their heads. And
he says Clean Wisconsin will take legal action to challenge the DNR issued permits for Line 5 and ask that construction be paused until it's resolved. Enbridge says the rerouting project would create more than 700 jobs, many for tribal members, and provide millions in tax revenue to the state. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, low 40s. Mostly cloudy, low 30s for lows tonight. Mostly cloudy with a high near 46 on your Sunday. Clouds and 32 for Sunday night. Chance of rain and snow for Monday. Highs in the upper 30s. Monday night, clouds and 20.
Right now, 40 degrees.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, former Wisconsin gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels turns down a Trump cabinet position. Is he lazy or just against divesting? Also, MTG claims subpoena power. Who's she coming after? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. Lacrosse's home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Scott Klug, and this is a special edition of our podcast, Lost in the Middle. Well, with election behind us, my reporting on the lost political middle is going to taper off a bit. But before Washington turns to battles over cabinet selections and wonkish policy debates, pretty boring from my perspective, I joined forces with two other political podcast buddies to give the election our own twisted postmortem. Justin Young's a professional comedian and the host of a podcast, Politics, Politics, Politics. Justin's loved politics since the year 2000, when he watched his high school teacher in Florida count pieces of ripped paper to determine who would be the leader of the free world, only in America. If you want to gear up for the 28 election, he has a wildly successful card game called The Contender to prep for the next presidential debate. Meanwhile, our Lost in the Middle guest, Andrew Heaton, is the driving force behind his show, The Political Orphanage. He's an independent with libertarian instincts, and we are a tiny echo chamber of two. He's the best-selling author of Laughter is Better Than Communism, as well as two very funny novels. He once opened up for famous actor William Shatner, who said, he's very, very funny. So there. He hosted our discussion, and sadly, we'll find that Justin had to bow out after the first half hour. Here's our conversation.
I'm Andrew Heaton, and I host The Political Orphanage. I am joined today by Justin Robert Young, good friend of mine and host of Politics, 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 as well as host of We're Not Wrong, a show in which I am a regular pundit. And we are joined by Scott Klug. Scott is me from the future. He's much more successful than me, a little bit more handsome, slightly less funny, but has an eerie similarity in his politics, which continues to baffle me. Hello, Scott. Good to see you.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys.
Yeah, and Heaton, you're not a regular pundit, Scott, on We're Not Wrong. You're a co-host. It's your show, too.
Thank you. That is what I meant to say. My brain is so scattered right now, Justin. Please don't read into that. I can never keep host and co-host straight. I can never remember what the proper designation is. Okay. Scott, you had initially wanted to convene our minds to discuss the election breakdown, and so I'm going to kick it to you. What do you think happened? What is your read on the election?
Well, a couple of sort of notes from 20,000 feet, and I'll let you guys jump in. You know, until this election, there was only one U.S. senator, Lonely Susan Collins, tucked up there in Maine, who got elected as a senator of one party while the president of another party, Joe Biden, won her reelection in 2020. This time out, there's a wide swath of them. So in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in it looks like Arizona and Nevada, it doesn't happen very often. If you talk to political scientists lots of times, they sort of laugh at ticket splitting as like this old quaint custom from the 1950s. But if you back up 2 years now, in 2022, it happened all over the place. It happened in Georgia with a Republican governor, a Democratic senator. It happened in Maine with a Republican, excuse me, in Vermont with a Republican governor, a Democratic senator. It happened in Kansas, for God's sakes. And it happens in Wisconsin because it always happens in Wisconsin. But I thought that was the real interesting takeaways from the election, just because I think all of us were trying to guess what would happen. I think the consensus and my guess was the Republicans would win the Senate. It looks like they're going to hold the House, which is a surprise to me. And I think Trump was a jump ball from the beginning. It was really hard. But I thought when I saw her lose North Carolina as badly as she did, that the Harris campaign was going to be in for a long night.
Yeah, I would say probably even if you wanted to get really degenerate with it, like I was, it was Duval County in Florida. As soon as you saw Duval County, which is Jacksonville, which actually had a big special election that a Democrat won in an off year, that was a gigantic sign that this was looking more like the Florida from 2022, which unfortunately for the Republicans did not precipitate a red wave. But if Duval's flipping like that, then that means that Georgia was probably flipping. And if Georgia was probably flipping, then that meant for sure North Carolina was flipping, because that is a little bit more red than Georgia. I think my biggest takeaway is Donald Trump's popular. And that's probably the biggest thing. It sounds stupid to say it now, but the Democrats didn't run a campaign that was indicative of them running against a popular candidate. They ran a campaign that was indicative of them running against somebody that everybody knew was really awful. They just needed it explained to them one more time. Where all those ticket splitters that Scott pointed out, all of them in the final months were running, "We worked with President Trump to bring jobs back to Michigan or back to Wisconsin." Even Ruben Gallego, you know, was brought in because Kyrsten Sinema wasn't progressive enough, that she was defending the filibuster and standing in the way of true progress. So the Democrats effectively chased out somebody who was an incumbent that would have gotten reelected with probably $0 put to her if she was running against Carrie Lake. Instead, they put in a progressive who then has to pretend that he's a border hawk, and Chuck Schumer has to spend tens of millions of dollars to convince the public of Arizona to do it. And we still, at least as we are talking right now, don't have an AP call. Ruben Gallego will be that senator. But still, mathematically, right now, on Monday, Senator Carrie Lake is in play. That wouldn't have been the case if Kyrsten Sinema were still there.
Yeah. I'm curious to both of you, what are your takeaways for the Democrats? And Scott, would you consider yourself a never-Trumper or a Republican in exile? Is there some label that you care to hoist a banner on?
Well, I would say philosophically, I'm a libertarian Republican. I'm not a fan of the government. I wish more of it would go away. I'm moderate on social issues. So I'm sort of a never Trump guy, never voted for him, like likely never will if he tries to run for a third time, which could be an interesting story. but I think that don't rule it out. The lesson for the Democrats, I think, is I buy into the theory that they really got clobbered by the woke stuff and by the economy. I think if you're a construction worker in, Michigan, where they're trying to ban electrical vehicles, which is the company you work for or the companies who your company does business with, and then sort of wrapped around all of this sort of smug righteousness, I think that's what cost them the election. And it's, I thought it was hysterical that there was a panic at the Washington Post because they didn't issue their editorial and that Bezos intervened. Now, it would have been a story, I think, had Bezos said endorse Trump, but he didn't. He just said, "We're not going to do this." And the Post went apoplectic. They've never endorsed a Republican. And trust me, nobody in battleground Wisconsin was waking up one morning, "Oh my God," thinking, "What will the Washington Post do?" And I think that's the same problem the Democrats had.
Well, no, that's true, Scott, because they were all waiting for Taylor Swift's event with Kamala Harris, which has been something that has gotten, she only endorsed. It was only an Instagram thing. She didn't show up at the Eras Tour, and that's that has brought fascism to America.
I believe it is mostly economic that happened. I think that there's a touch of the wokeness, but I think it's overplayed. There was an advertisement that was running in battleground states.
You're in show business, so of course you think it's not played up enough.
the ad that I saw that I actually thought was a brilliant ad, it went Kamala Harris cares about they, them, Donald Trump cares about you, which I thought was actually a brilliant ad, highlighting there's this sort of abstract, borderline theological phenomenon going on that the Democrats are paying attention to. this guy cares about the price of butter. I think that that was a very smart play. I do think it was mostly economic, and that I've basically had two different polling groups within the Heat and Chicken Index that I've used to tabulate where I thought the election was going to go. And that includes people who work in media and politics and people who don't work in media and politics. And so within the Trumposphere of people that voted for Trump, I'm going to discount people that work in media and politics, as I do not think that we or they are really emblematic of the overall population. So when I spoke to just people in Oklahoma, people in Texas, Uber drivers, folks at various events I would go to, it almost all variations of why are you voting for Trump were basically eggs cost a lot, and I feel Democrats are mean to me. That was pretty much it. That was the takeaway that I had repeatedly. And what I find interesting about this is it seems to me that about half the Democrats are aware of this. And all of the interactions that I've had and in the online publications that I'm reading, about half are going, look, we really have to figure out a way to meet people in the middle, in the bell curve distribution of what they care about, which appears to be bread and butter issues. And the other half is going, oh, hamburgers cost a lot, so fascism, well done. And I'm going, oh my God, you've learned nothing. You've learned absolutely nothing.
Well, and I think, you know, if you look at the demographic split, I mean, I think it's pretty interesting as the Democratic base, to a large degree, aside from Black women, who are still the most loyal coalition of anyone, it's largely, you could argue, affluent, suburban, and city voters, the city voters who live in 48-story condo buildings, not the city builders who, city dwellers like my son in L.A., who lives in a studio apartment, which is smaller than the Gemini space capsule floating through space right now. But I think that for them, it didn't make a difference, right? I think they find it hard to believe that there are families somewhere who say, we can't go to Disney this year, and we can only go to McDonald's once a week, not twice a week. I mean, it's real arithmetic if you don't make very much money. And I think especially for a lot of folks who worked in construction, and I know you can put up all the fancy economic indicators and all of that, but for them, when they looked in their wallet, it was a different experience than it was 8 years ago.
And I would say even further than that, Scott, that it's not just a different experience. It's a ritual humiliation. And you wonder why the inflation has a historical legacy that was reaffirmed last Tuesday of killing presidencies dead. It's exactly that. If you have the same job that you had, and so let's say, you know, unemployment has been where it's at, which has not, you know, significantly risen. And so that was something that people pointed at. But that's even worse in certain cases, because let's say you got the same job and you make under $100,000 and all of a sudden you're poorer. You didn't do anything different. Everything stayed exactly the same. You were still working the same hours that you were working. You're just older and poorer, and you blame somebody for that. That is just simply how it happens. And there really, really was a disconnect in my life, which is largely either, you know, a bunch of upper middle class millennials who are at the peak of our vibrancy and earning potential and, you know, driving around in our Teslas saying, I don't know, I think the economy's good. Because for us, inflation is every once in a while coming out of the Whole Foods and saying, gee, that's a high number. Like, it's not something that is every time you go and you have to look at your kids in the face and say, no, we're getting the bag of cereal as opposed to the Lucky Charms. And now I have to deal with a screaming toddler because they don't know the difference of what, you know, a broken supply chain is. And then it doesn't bring you any comfort when the White House continually gaslit America throughout this and continually said,
name,
well, this is just
one
transitory.
Time other than economics or the senility of the president, other than, I mean, those, yeah, two factors, name one time.
And look, you can lie about the president not having his marbles. Reagan got away with it mostly, but you can as long as the economy's good, everybody's got to feel good about the economy. They got to feel good about how things are going. And they weren't. It was transitory. Then it was Putin's price hike. And then eventually the only thing that they ever acknowledged it was to say, well, it's coming down now. You know, it's doing pretty good now. There was never pain.
I will add, they would say inflation's going down, by which they mean the rate of inflation is going,
yeah,
down. That's not the same thing as inflation. So it's gone. Inflation's increased by 10% over the last year and a half. Your money's gone. It's gone. It's not coming back. It's not that the prices are going to go back down. It's that the rate of acceleration is slowing down,
yes,
which is a meaningful distinction for people. Like, I'm a semi-successful comedian. I've had to work very hard to save what little money I have. And I am the Warren Buffett of comedians, given that I have any savings at all. And watching, you know, 10% of that just evaporate was like, oh, well, that's fun. Yeah, that's it continued. I want to flip it on the other side, though. Scott, I'm descended from Barry Goldwater Republicans, and that's the household in which I was raised. The Never Trumpers, Republicans in exile, whatever we want to call them, that I have met have either reconciled to Trump and gone, you know, maybe I overplayed this and he's rough, but I can get behind him. Or alternately, they are sitting Shiva for the party and the death of the party. I think at this point, it's difficult to say that Trump is a transitory blip and that we will go back to Mitt Romney, you know, Mitt Romney Jr. 4 years from now. Do you re-register as a Democrat? Do you restart the Whig Party? What do you do?
Well, so I think he's a unique figure, right? This is, if you're sitting in central Minnesota trying to figure out how the hell did Jesse Ventura get elected as a professional wrestler. And I think that's part of what will happen. It will return to normalcy. But I think whatever happens 4 years from now, whoever the Republican nominee is, the morning they wake up, it's not the party that elected George W. Bush. It's not the party that, well, didn't vote particularly well for Ryan and for Romney when they ran. It's much more blue collar. It's much more rural. I think in many ways it's much more evangelical than it was, which is a strange phrase to use in concert with Donald Trump's personal habits. I don't think you're going to be able to go back. I don't know that those suburbs will flip. And I think the danger for the Republicans, if they go, oh, well, we got to recapture the wow counties around Milwaukee, which is the Republican base for the last 20 years, which largely drifted away from national Republican politics because of Trump. I think for every vote you pick up in the suburbs, if you don't handle this well, you're going to lose 3 votes in the small towns. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how the parties recalibrate, right? Because the Republicans will have to react to whatever the Democrats do and vice versa. And they're going to have to react to the way the economy is. And Justin's absolutely right. I mean, 2 years from now, if the economy is soaring, the Republicans will add seats in the Senate and continue to hold on to the House. And if we have a huge burp, as Trump puts, you know, tariffs on things, tariffs are just a hidden tax on people, right? And so the idea that we're going to rebuild the U.S. industrial base so we can manufacture television sets here is crazy. You know, people are going to be paying $3,000 for a TV rather than $700. So I think 2 years from now, the challenge for the Republicans will be the folks who want to sort of ratchet the clock back, they're not going to be there. In the same way that if I'm a Democrat, I got to figure out how the hell I'm going to capture union workers, not the union organizers, because they're professional Democrats. That's the name of the game. But if you're a steward in a, you know, in a GM plant, assuming GM's still around 3 or 4 years from now, then you're going to wonder, where are your members? Because in this situation, a lot of union workers flip to Trump.
Yeah, I read an interesting study in the last few days where they were doing polling of, do you identify as working class or not? And in this particular study, and I forget the organization that did it, 75% of the people that self-identified as working class also identified as conservative. And there seems to be this kind of rhetorical flip that's happened in the same way that for Republicans, the Republican Party will always be the party of Lincoln. And black people may or may not agree with that, that might be a rhetoric that should have been retired at some point. People's mileage will vary, but it's a kind of hagiography that accompanies the Republican Party. The Democrats believe they are always the party of labor. They are always the working class party, and they're the managerial party. And so there does seem to be this disconnect that's happened there.
Well, they feel that they're the working class party because that's what the people in the cities want to believe they are. The people in the cities, every liberal in the city who wants to unionize their Starbucks and has no concept of how or why a union works. It's just a cool thing that they want to say because they read a few posts on Mother Jones. That's the brand, right? But it doesn't really speak to exactly what that party has been. Now, they certainly still have good relationship with leaderships in unions, but it is what it is. I want to go back to something that you mentioned, though, Heaton, that you are descendant of Barry Goldwater. And I really think that Barry Goldwater is somebody that I've thought a lot about over the last few days, because it's unquestioned now that Donald Trump is the Ronald Reagan of this modern era and the way that Reagan swept out an entire generation of conservative leadership and installed his own. And part of the reason why I think of Goldwater is that considering where the Republican Party wound up going, which is a lot closer to where Goldwater, when Goldwater ran in 64, he was looked at as an absolute crazy person, and he was marketed as such by the Johnson campaign.
A literal crazy person. That's why we have the Goldwater rule.
Because exactly,
the Psychiatric Association had like 50 people go, oh, yes, I've read several articles that he's had. He's clearly a narcissist.
By the way, I believe published in Truth Magazine, which is the other funny part about that. But it's like he is not remembered in the same way because he got run over by Ronald Reagan in the same way that a generation of people are going to be thought of differently because they got run over by Donald Trump. This is his party. The question is, will the successful Republican politicians look to pick up his coalition, or will they try to go back into the past and find it? I think on smaller races, House races, you're going to be able to do it. When you're talking about statewide races, this is now Trump's coalition. You're going to have to go to those steak fries. You're going to have to go to those union halls. It ain't going to be all country club anymore. Those days are gone.
Yeah, agree 1,000%. Now, let me ask you the more important question. Is this good for comedy or bad for comedy?
It's not good for my comedy. I will tell you why.
SNL made jokes. SNL made a joke in their cold open. It was an actual joke with a concept, Heaton. That's I don't know if you saw it.
That's really good. No, I'm glad to hear that. The phenomena that happened during the Trump years that was bad for comedy is that twofold, there were a significant amount of comedians that felt a moral obligation to say, but we need to be serious for a moment, constantly. And on top of that, Trump was, I think, for a very long time, a difficult figure to come up with a comedic angle around, simply because a really good tool within political satire is exaggeration. And if Donald Trump comes out and he's literally using the disembodied skull of Don Rickles as a puppet to make fun of Guam and then throws it away, like we're already starting at an 11 out of 10. I don't know where to take it from here. So that was a functional problem with it. The other problem that was just insufferable and so irritating was there was just a massive amount of clapter that came into the comedy ecosystem during the Trump years where, frankly, a lot of subpar comedians or non-comedians would wander into an open mic and they just give their political hot takes on Trump, and everybody felt obligated to clap for them because they weren't talented enough to get laughs. So there was a lot of that going on. I'll say on my end, I have just began working for Reason, and my plan is to make fun of whoever's in power, as I usually do, and really just make fun of wherever I think I can stash in a joke. There's a decent amount of people that are on the libertarian side of things that really just want to make fun of Democrats. So if I spend my time making fun of Trump because he's the president, from where I'm at, I don't know that it will necessarily be as popular as if Kamala were in power. Like, weirdly, I, as an oppositional figure to a Democrat, will probably be better for my comedy and brand than me being an oppositional figure to a Republican. But that's fairly niche. Overall, though, I think if canary in the coal mine, Justin, if Saturday Night Live no longer thinks that they will abet fascism unless they have a sad woman play piano at the beginning of sketches, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I thought the thing that they did was had the cast come out as themselves and talk about how much they love Donald Trump and they all voted for him just so they could stay off the enemies list. And it's like for a liberal institution, at least it had a concept. And it had a joke and the punchlines were funny. Like it was slapdash, but I thought it was meaningful, a meaningful step in the right direction. I think that the dark days of comedy where comedic heroes like Stephen Colbert result to puerile and backwards homophobic jokes that would be, you know, something that you would yell at your kid for saying on the playground simply because it hurts old Donnie Trump's feelings are over. And I think that the world is better for it.
I'll add to that just over the last few days, hanging out with lots of people that voted for Kamala Harris and myself, for that matter, my feelings this election are very different than my feelings in 2016. In 2016, I, who was working at Fox Business at the time, was apoplectic that Trump won. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being, oh, I wish I'd got vanilla instead of chocolate, but I couldn't care less. 10 being Emperor Palpatine has destroyed the Senate and we have to go into hiding on Tatooine at this exact moment. I was like a 7 maybe in 2016. And now in 2024, I'm like a 4. I am bothered by this. I don't think it's a good direction for the country, but I'm not frightened. And like again, like and this kind of happened in 2016 where I was very freaked out the night of. And then 2 days later, I started getting messages from my friends where they went, we need to start putting lists together of who can hide our Jewish friends. And I went, one, I don't think we're at the point where we need to worry about the Jews being rounded up. Secondly, if we were, we shouldn't put their name on a list that could be intercepted by authorities. It's just really bad planning on your part.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more of our conversation in the Lost Political Middle.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President-elect Trump presented a flurry of top administration nominees in the last 24 hours, topping the list, hedge fund manager and billionaire Scott Bessent. ABC's Mary Alice Parks tells us more about some of the other nominations.
Trump also naming Oregon Congresswoman Lori Chavez Dreamer for labor secretary in a nod to unions. And bringing back Russ Vogt to run the Office of Management and Budget, he was that key architect of Project 2025, that conservative plan to overhaul the government.
Intense weather hitting both coasts this weekend. West Coast, an atmospheric river continuing to pummel communities. San Francisco has a flash flood warning, dangers of mudslides. Meanwhile, the Northeast, first major snowfall of the season, knocking out power, creating some dangerous road conditions in Pennsylvania and upstate New York. Israeli Defense Forces say they're examining Hamas's claim that a hostage has been killed in northern Gaza. There's no word on how the hostage might have been killed. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks outpace Indiana. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks jumped out to an early lead at five-serve form and went on to beat the Pacers 129-117. Another triple-double from Giannis with 10 rebounds, 11 assists, 37 points. The Bucks are now 7-9. Tonight, they host the Charlotte Hornets. Men's college basketball, Wisconsin with an 86-70 victory over Central Florida at the Greenbrier tip-off tournament being held this weekend in Orlando. The Badgers remain undefeated at 6-0, and they're going to face Pittsburgh tomorrow at 4:30 to wrap up their trip. The boys' high school state football tournament ended last night with Green Bay's Bayport High taking the Division I state title with a 25-18 win over Muskego. NFL, Packers and 49ers tomorrow. San Francisco without their starting quarterback, Brock Purdy. Brandon Allen at quarterback, but they still have a lot of experience on offense.
You know, they got a veteran group and a lot of guys that's, you know, top players in this league. It's going to be a big game, you know, get to see you on Sunday.
That's the Packers' Kenny Clark. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It was time to make our own Christmas traditions. For years, we've been trekking to both sets of in-laws, both Christmas dinners. It was just too much. So this year, we started to look for a place to get...
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, low 40s. Mostly cloudy, low 30s for lows tonight. Mostly cloudy with a high near 46 on your Sunday. Clouds and 32 for Sunday night. Chance of rain and snow for Monday. Highs in the upper 30s. Monday night, clouds and 20.
Currently, 42 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
In 1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, if you are just tuning in, I'm Charlie Behrens. This is the Cripes Cast, and here's my conversation with comedian Yiannis Pappas. What do you think, like, comedy's role is in sort of, like, shaping culture? Have you seen that change over your time in comedy? Have you seen it change for better or worse? I think for worse.
So comedy's become, I think, a little more irrelevant in that it has an effect on the culture the way that it used to when comedians like George Carlin, and you'd watch that special and it would make you think, or now it's like this scroll thing where you're like, you don't even know who the comedian is. You're just looking at the quick joke and you just scroll past it. You don't even, oh, I saw it. And you just, it's disorienting. It's overwhelming. And yeah, the quality has gone down because whatever increases in quantity decreases in quality, and people are living in their own niche worlds driven by algorithms. So there's nothing that unifies us except hate. I've seen that unify us, like hate, extreme disapproval of another political ideology to an extent that you didn't see before the internet. Beliefs and conspiracy theories unite people, which they usually hate the other side. I think a lot of times people vote for the candidates out of spite for the other side. Sometimes you'd be like, I don't even like this guy, but I hate her. It's like the thing that I see most unifying us is hate, which is really weird because we're not doing anything all together anymore. There's no movies everyone's seeing. There's no
news.
You know, the only thing is football. Football.
Yeah,
that's what everyone's watching. Just football.
And everyone's
football
watching
and hate.
It.
Football and hate.
And more people are watching football because they got money on the line, you know?
That's kind of it. Yeah. Yeah. And some of the players too, probably.
Oh yeah. 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 Well, that's a whole thing, you know. Oh, we haven't even scratched that surface.
That's gonna happen. You're gonna see the guys using friends and proxies, you know, 3 degrees of separation to kind of try to, you know, increase their salaries, especially in football where they get you, they don't have guaranteed contracts and all that.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. We're talking about a lot of really uplifting stuff so far on this podcast. You know, like what keeps you going through all this stuff? Like what keeps you making it, not just like I don't know, giving it up, retiring, whatever. What keeps you going?
Yeah, it's I'm optimistic. I don't blame all the things we're talking about. I don't blame anyone for it. I think we're all victims to it. I think we're all struggling with it. I think everyone's trying to figure it out. I don't, I just try to understand what people are going through because I'm going through the same thing. I'm no better at it. I've done all those bad things. I've pulled over on the side of the road to continue a Facebook argument. I've made all those mistakes that everybody makes, you know? So I think we will figure it out. I think this is just the time where, like I said, to bring it back, it's just a new technology that we're now coming around to understanding needs to be used right and regulated right. And it needs to be, it's not good for you in some ways, but it's good for you in others. I mean, social media specifically, I think is bad, like cigarettes in a lot of ways, but the internet, I think overall is great. And, I think it's a good time for comedy in that way, especially live comedy, because, and I think that's why there's such a boom, is because now I think people are realizing that that's a great experience to go watch someone for an hour live. Everyone, it used to be that being on a screen was such a unique experience. You're like, oh my God, there's a comedian on a screen. He must be famous. He must be good. And everyone would watch, but now screens are so commonplace that the unique experience is actually going out and seeing someone live and, you know, being soaked in by the pauses and the the rhythm of it and the timing of it and letting someone take you on a journey and having a live night out with other people where you can hear them laugh and you're a part of that, you know, human experience. We're a social species. So that's what makes us happy. You know, happiness is being around other people, you know? So I think it's been good for comedy in that way, live comedy. I think that's why you've seen the boom. I mean, there's a real boom in people buying tickets. It's definitely gone down this year, but I think that's because of the economy and people worried about the election and all the uncertainty and inflation. But, you know, I think that'll even out. And I think, you know, maybe plays come back again. You know, people want to go out and watch a play. Like, humans always seem to go through these dark times, and then there's just, you know, there's just something about us where we just keep pushing and get through it. So I just think I'd rather think of it that way and be a part of that. Like, let's make everyone's life a little better by bringing attention to these things and making light and not judging or yelling at people about it and just sort of trying to get through this. Cause I think everyone's a little disoriented, everyone's a little like looking for meaning now because the internet does so much for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, I've been down a lot of those things myself, the rabbit holes or the, you know, you get really pissed at some Russian who's pretending to be from the Midwest in your comments, you know, those Russians are good at that actually.
Yeah, they
slip
love
up
it
every now and again, but yeah, it gets them off. But I feel like I got this thing where I try to go on an hour walk every day. Which is easy for me. I don't have kids or anything. So, but every time I do it, my brain goes from feeling like it's just got a bunch of plaque on it, you know, to just coming back and being like, oh, all right, this thing, like, you just have this, like, you're like, why the f- am I so anxious? And then I go on that walk and I just come back and I'm good again. And I feel like, you know, more people would do that. That would probably be good. And then you'd be more connected to the fact that this place is heating up pretty quick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But, cause you're outside and you're like, it's warm out here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's another, the machines, you can see it. Like, they're doing it perfect. They're like, all right, so we'll divide them. Divide and conquer, you know, like, united we stand, divided we fall. We like put the way to defeat us on like a bumper sticker, you know? So it's like we made it so easy to tell like Russia or just the robots, like how to defeat humanity. And we're letting them do it, you know? So like,
we are, it really is. I mean, they're, you know, it's just crazy. And, you know, the social media platforms have allowed it to happen because, you know, it shows more engagement. They look the other way. They're going like, oh, look at all these people. They go to the advertisers, they go to their board and they go, look at how many people are on our platform. They're like, are they real people? And they go, don't ask that question. Look at the engagement. Look at them engaging. Look at this. This is great. These are engaged eyeballs for your product. And they go, all right, can we look at your metrics? Yeah, we have all the data right here. It's our data. Look at this. It's great. Yeah. Yeah. And it is just some farm in Russia and China, and they're just, you know, 100 million fake accounts, and they're just going nuts. I bet you every citizen of some countries just has like, that's like the government gives them a little money. Just like, go with some Americans. Just like, here's 10 cents, 10 cents a month. Just have a fake profile on X and just go wild.
Russia loves doing that stuff. They've been really, really good at it and really proficient, because like they can't defeat us with their military. So the whole thing, my buddy's buddy is in the CIA, and he was saying like, you know, Russia knows they can't do it with the military. So the way they do it is social media. The way they do it is, that's why Twitter, I feel like 6 months ago, someone was looking at all the Twitter profiles and like an insane number, insane, like some like 80% or what, it was mind blowing how many of those accounts were just not real, you know? So anyways, what
I love that this is to promote my comedy shows. By the way, my comedy shows are nothing like this. I'm talking about my family and being a father, and it's all kind of light. Oh, it's more light than this, but there are some of these themes in there that I kind of sneak in the jokes, and it's fun. Yeah, it's a good time.
Where are you playing? You're coming to Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, yeah. Coming to Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Improv. And I've never been to Milwaukee. So yeah, I've only been to Madison a bunch of times, and I've never been to Milwaukee. So I'm really excited to come to Milwaukee and go to all the bathhouses that Jeffrey Dahmer went to. They're like a tour.
Yeah. There is actually. Yeah. I guide it. And I wear these glasses when I do.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go.
Yeah, I want to go get a hot dog with the special sauce. What's it called? The secret sauce or something? Oh,
so the stadium sauce. Yeah, yeah. You go to Brewers game at the Brewers are in town. They got the stadium sauce there. You got to get a brat. So, yeah, I'll give you sort of your Milwaukee 101. You got to go. We have a Bronze Fonz down on the Riverwalk. Arthur Fonzarelli. The Fonz, obviously, Happy Days took place in Milwaukee. They didn't shoot it here. They shot it somewhere in L.A. But anyways, we have a bronze statue of the Fonz, which I think is pretty damn cool. Some people are, you know, you always have those super hipsters that are like, that doesn't represent us. I think it's pretty cool. And so that's there. We got a great art museum here. Which is sweet. The Bucks are going to be probably playing a game around the time you're in town. Pabst, Miller, all the beers, Schlitz, you know, you can go do brewery tours till you're blue in the face. So are you a drinker? Do you like beer?
Yeah, I like a brew here and there. Yeah. And all that stuff. I'm going to do all that stuff. I can never go to a game. Basketball's, you know, my favorite sport. And the only time I've ever been able to go to a game was once in Salt Lake City. I caught the middle of the third and fourth quarter because I just ran over after my shows and was able to catch a third, because it's always at the same time as the games. They're at night. So it's like, I would love to go to a Bucks game. I would love, especially since Giannis is, you know. I mean, thanks to that guy, my Google ranking, I used to be pretty high up on the Giannis. Now I'm like way down. There's like some sculptor who's also a famous Giannis. I mean, it's like he has dominated my Google search.
Has there been any like positive back and forth, you know, between it? Or is it just, has he just taken, I mean, you guys spell it different.
Thank God he spells it different. Yeah, if he spelled it the same way, I mean, I'd be obsolete. So he does spell it different. So that helps a little bit. But yeah, it's so funny to hear. I'll be just like watching the game or TNT and I'll hear Giannis and I'll be like, that's me. And I'm like, oh no. That's a famous Giannis. I always had a dream of making that name in America mean something. And now it'll just always be, oh, like the basketball player. I'm like, yeah. Like the greatest basketball player on the planet. Yeah. it's like being named Michael Jordan. As your whole first name. It's like, because everyone always just calls him Giannis because the last name is too hard to pronounce.
Right.
So it's basically like my name's like Michael Jordan. And so it's like.
Well, at least it's not like, you know, Michael Bolton, like in the office space. Remember that? Yeah. I mean, it's positive, you know, so at least you're not fighting it like, no, not like that. You know,
Right.
Do you ever get to cities like early and go hang out for a day or anything like that, or usually one city to the next kind of thing?
Yeah. Nowadays, cause I got two daughters, like, you know, I go day of show cause I just, at least I just want to spend the least amount of time away from them, but I'm excited to do this stuff in Milwaukee cause I've never been there. And a lot of the cities I've been to before. So I just go do the shows. Friday, Saturday, and just try to get back. You know, it's when you have daughters, our kids now, when you're a comic, it's like the road just, it's, you know, you don't look at it the way you used to. I used to like, I love being away, and I still love doing the shows and being away, but I do miss my family. And so I try to get back as soon as I can. Yeah.
How old are your kids?
I got a 4 and a 1-year-old.
Oh man. So, yeah. Those are special years there too. I get that.
It's special years and I don't want to miss a lot of it. And, I'm surrounded. I talk about it all in my act. It's all about just being a father with girls and I'm just surrounded by estrogen. It's just crazy. It's really like, it's a lot. It's a lot.
How is that, having kids? How's that changed you as a comic?
Oh, everything. It changes your whole life. makes you less self-obsessed, self-absorbed. Comedians are very self-absorbed. We're always like listening, but also going like thinking of jokes and thinking of ourselves and our careers and stuff. And it's a total shift from that into just thinking about your kids. And yeah, you think a little more about like, what is my daughter going to see? And, you know, it matures you, it just sort of matures you and, makes you grow up, which, I think in our culture, nobody really wants to anymore because things are so good. We're like, I don't want to grow up and things are so good for me right now. I can't start a family. I got a Twitch account that just is starting to get hot. I don't have the time to think about kids.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but it's rewarding. So it's both, but it is hard. Yeah. Like, when JD Vance talks about the cat women or whatever, he's like, these women aren't having kids. I'm like, I kind of understand why they don't. It is a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. Like anyone who chooses not to have kids, I'm like, I get it.
What's been like the hardest part that like you didn't expect?
That you don't get a chance to have a moment for yourself until they go to sleep. And then when they go to sleep, you're too tired to do anything. So it's basically no break from work. That's the thing. I could say that right away. It's just you wake up and you're working, you're a dad, you're taking care of people, you get them to school and you're like, my 4-year-old's going to pre-K now. So it's like, and then I come home and my 1-year-old's like, eating crayons and I'm like keeping her alive. And, and you just are constantly working and there's just no time for you, which makes you value whatever you do. Like when they're asleep it's just like, it's the best. And then you're like, oh, I can do something. And then you're like, I just want to lay here. I can't move. I can't do anything. And then you're next thing, you're asleep and so there's just no time for yourself. And then you go and you work and then you're doing comedy and you're like, all right, now I got to make these people feel happy. It's like, what about me? Where's me? Who's paying attention to me? It's a 24-hour, 7 days a week job that doesn't stop. So the relentlessness of it.
Yeah. What's been like the best thing, the thing that you didn't imagine?
Oh God, just the love you have for them. The love is unimaginable and how they melt you and just make you more empathetic, more understanding, more patient. It's seeing the world through their eyes. It brings you back to your childhood, gets you in touch with sort of the sillier part of you. And, just that it's not all about you anymore, which is a freeing thing. Because it's not about any of us. And so your ego takes the blow that it needs to kind of free you. And it's peace. There's a lot more peace in my life with kids. It's ironic because you think, death is the scary thing and impermanence is the scary thing. But when you just have this radical acceptance about, I have all this stuff that I love, and especially now my daughters, I love them so much. It's crazy to think about like, oh my God, one day I'm going to leave before them. But then that frees you up in some weird way to understanding that it's not about you. And that takes a pressure off. And then you also understand we all die and we all have this experience. So we're all part of this thing together. And there's some peace that comes with that, just knowing that we're part of something bigger together. We're all part of the same thing. And you don't have any control over it. And that's kind of a good thing, because I think a lot of anxiety comes from like trying to control things you can't control and worrying about things you have that don't. You have no control over it. I'm being redundant, but you just give it, you just accept. There's like a level of acceptance to like what this is about. Like, all right, I'm here. And then my daughters are going to be here and it's part of this bigger thing. We're all part of it and we're all kind of in it together. And so you just feel more connected to what life is. And you just have more of a radical acceptance of what reality is. And that ironically doesn't it's ironic because it's scary. You go, oh my God, there's so much suffering and we die and but for some reason, when you really radically accept it, you're like free because we're all in it together and we're all connected. And I don't know. I mean, it's like, yeah, I guess having kids is like taking ayahuasca.
Well, you talk about you've already said like things like radical acceptance and the therapy stuff. You do therapy?
Yeah, I do therapy.
Do you like it? Do you think that helps your look at me, I'm already saying, do you think that helps your comedy? I'm already looking for how does that help the word spoken like true workaholic.
Comedians are, you know, they obviously, to do comedy, there's something you missed.
Yeah.
You try to get strangers to like you and approve of you. So it used to be, I remember all comedians were like, I don't want to do therapy because I don't want anything to make me less funny. I like that I'm angry when I'm not supposed to be angry. But I found that has changed too. Like, I don't know anyone who is not in therapy now. All the comedians I know, I can't even. Yeah, there's just a change in perspective on it, and it. I think it helps. It just helps. I don't think it hurts. It helps. I mean, that would be weird if comedy was the only profession where not being well helped you. You know,
right?
So right. I think that's just a big lie about that, and I think we all bought it for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I think like I've done it for a while, and I think it's just good to get the like your brain is one thing that you take everywhere, you know, and so if you can be good wherever you go, I mean, that's like that's better than having some souped up car, you know, that has like ass warmers on the seat or whatever. Like if you're 100%. Always, you know, like if you can be the same you in a airplane or a tree stand or like walking through a crowded city, like that's a good way to be. You can figure 100%. That out.
Yeah, 100%.
You also find like all these like you go in thinking like you got a unique problem, thinking that you're somehow special. And then they are like, oh, yeah, you have anxiety. And you're like, no, I mean, I got something more special than anxiety. And then they send you like a YouTube video to watch and you come back and you're like, yeah, I got some pretty crippling anxiety. So,
yeah.
What are we going to do about that? You know?
Yeah. And other people have it, too. And, you know, it's anytime you're comforted by the fact that you're not alone and every other people do it, there's just something that feels good about that. You're like, oh yeah, I'm dealing with what other people are dealing with. I'm not alone with this. And you just, I don't know. Yeah. Cause we're a social species. Like that. We're just not meant to be alone. We're not cheetahs, you know?
Right.
Yeah. We're wolves. We need to be in packs and around each other and socializing. And
yeah, we're even more than that. We're like, you know, the apes or whatever the first humans were, and we're just looking around for saber-toothed tigers, you know?
Now
that there are no saber-toothed tigers, and almost not even real tigers, back to the climate change. But you say that and you're always looking for it. And if there's not a saber-toothed tiger, you're going to invent one so quick.
Yes.
And that's where the, you know, disaster baiting about whatever issues going on in society or like some person who said something to you, we just make mountains out of molehills. We make saber-toothed tigers out of like little house cats. You know,
yeah, and that's like it goes back to what we started talking about. We have these like prehistoric brains in these modern times, and we have the only way to catch up is to look inward and figure it out and just sort of coach yourself into understanding that and dealing with it.
Yeah. That's it for this week, folks. But if you want to listen to my full conversation with Giannis Pappas, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No. Got to keep her moving.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Maggie Dawn.
It's Thanksgiving week, and I've got a special guest, Professor Bill Whitford, the named plaintiff in the Supreme Court gerrymandering case out of Wisconsin, joins us. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. Max Inc. Radio.
This is Paige Kleber. The 11-year-old will be live in studio playing songs from her new album, I'm Terry Barr.
Saturday and Sunday night starting at 6. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.